ordering takeout to save an industry. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for being with us. Just ahead, in the midst of crisis, restaurants need your help to survive. We'll tell you about today's Great American Takeout. Call us up now at 549-2937. Then later, how you can continue to support this city's cultural institutions from the comfort of your own home. But first, what you need to know right now about the spread of coronavirus. There are 82 reported cases of the virus in Northeast Florida today. That's up from 69 yesterday. 5 local deaths have been reported as downtown testing sites expand to all age groups. Statewide, the number of confirmed coronavirus cases has risen to 1,227. Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry, by executive order, says employees able to work from home must start doing so today. Curry also says he has been working with state officials to bring an emergency regional field hospital here to Jacksonville. By contrast, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is still refusing a statewide lockdown despite petitions from citizens and lawmakers. Meanwhile, in an effort to expedite relief funds for the food and beverage industry, which has been devastated by this crisis, a locally led coalition of more than 115 industry owner operators has sent a letter to the governor urging him to provide immediate support. All this as restaurants across the country want you to take part in today's Great American Takeout and order takeout or delivery from your favorite local place. It's just one way to keep the industry going since most eateries have closed their doors to limit the spread of the disease. Chef Dwayne Belyakov is the co-founder of Bread and Board in Five Points, and he helped organize the letter to the governor. He's on the line. Dwayne, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And as we talk about the Great American Takeout, we want to hear from anyone who works in the restaurant or hospitality or beverage industry. Call us up right now. Let us know how you're doing. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. Tweets to @MelissaNJax. And our Facebook page is also open. All right. So tell us, how did this effort come together? You collaborated on this and basically got the restaurant industry to send a plea to the governor. Tell us about it.
I was working brunch just now over a week ago, business as usual. I mean, information coming down the pipeline, of course. And Jonathan, my business partner, sent me a quick message saying, hey, look what's going on in Portland. We got a letter going to the governor asking restaurants to shut down, you know, from a safety standpoint. And he said, I really think this is something we should take a look at. And by the end of that same day, Sunday, I had reached out to a handful of our colleagues and peers, I should say, in the industry, mainly John Enseta and Tom Gray, who I've always got on speed dial when things pop up for us, and said, hey, guys, what do you think about this? You know, is this something we can try and pull together quickly? And both of them within minutes said, hey, let's get working on this. So Tom called a meeting for us, and by Tuesday we had a group of restaurant owners and operators all in one room and on conference call and really started the process of drafting the letter.
Tell us what you're asking of the governor.
Well, it's interesting because as I'm on hold, I'm listening to the updates on your channel, of course, and understanding the letter to President Trump has now gone from Governor DeSantis, asking many of the things that we covered in the letter, which I is fantastic. I mean, it's happening in real time. You could kind of throw a dart right now at all 10 or 15 of the items that we listed on the letter. And there's no one priority. I think all of it's really important. But we're really asking that some of the hurdles that restaurants have to jump through every day to just simply open their doors and do business are lessened to some extent, that we don't have to jump those hurdles in the coming months as we try and rebuild. Some of the main things, and one of the main things that keeps popping up in my head is that proactively we were calling the insurance companies as this was starting to unfold and being told, you're not covered for anything like this. We've asked the governor to look into including pandemic and epidemic into the verbiage of insurance policies statewide, that when we have business interruption claims, which restaurants, are typically not covered in many cases, that this be added to the verbiage of many of the policies or all of the policies statewide, so that insurance companies can help shoulder some of the burden. We pay for this every single day, every single month, this policy, and we're wanting some benefits there. But really, I mean, this whole conversation started with our employees. And, sitting around that round table, the first thing that popped up for many people, our friends at the Bearded Pig, Michael Schmidt and Chad Muncy, both were like, hey, guys, what are we going to do about our employees? You know, these are folks that get up every day and work for us. What can we do to help protect them? And nearly across the board, that's where the conversation started. So we're looking for expanded coverage with unemployment claims, which it sounds like Governor DeSantis has now asked the president to do, which we applaud. Florida is fifth in the nation, fifth lowest unemployment rate, or excuse me, unemployment benefits that are offered to employees. A full-time employee can make as little as $6 an hour when receiving unemployment benefits. And so we're asking temporarily that all employees, at least at the bare minimum, are able to receive 100% of their lost income. We may be working towards that, but it sounds like right now we're still lobbying to just get the extended time periods for the unemployment.
And looking at the petition, and it's at change.org, you're also asking for the suspension or deferment of all local and state sales tax and licensing fees. You've asked, as you said, about unemployment. You want the emergency bridge loan program to be paid back over a longer period of time. And rent and mortgage relief. That I would think for any small business, restaurant or not, those are the big asks, Duane. Have you heard, what are you hearing from Tallahassee about this?
It's slow. It's slow, and we're not hearing much yet. I think that the last week has been pure reaction. Our legislators and our local government is scrambling, as we all have been this week, and we applaud everyone for moving as quickly as they are to piece together whatever portions of this they can accommodate.
Let me just jump in and ask you, is Bread and Board closed or open for takeout today? Let me ask you about today's big national action, the Great American Takeout. Tell me about that.
Sure. We are open, and we will be open to takeout. We are limited to takeout, of course, takeout and delivery only, and have kind of pledged to do that until the government tells us that we can't. You know, and of course, from a safety standpoint, we closed the dining room days in advance of the mandate originally. But we are open to takeout. We feel like we are serving the community every day that we're opening up. We certainly are not making any money at this point. Our sales are down. I mean, of course.
And how long could you go? How many weeks could you go before you'd be out of business? You know, how much cushion do you have to pay the rent, to pay your bills? What's the time window?
Well, you know, it's different for every operator, I think, and that was really what the conversation was partially about when we sat around. Some of us are established, some of us are well-established and have been around in the community for many years. Some of these restaurants that we're talking to have been open for weeks. They poured their savings into opening their restaurant. So really everyone's situation is slightly different. Historically, restaurants don't work on very on high margins. Mm-hmm. It's a very low-margin industry. So savings in the restaurant world for independence is virtually not there for many of us until we become more established. So, I mean, for us, we're kind of diversifying the operation, trying to do a number of different things online and within the community to keep our folks employed. But everyone is part-time at this point, and everyone is prepared that if we need to close to be safe, we're going to do so.
All right. And as restaurant owners around Florida petition the governor for relief, And the Great American Takeout is happening today. Just search that hashtag. Just order takeout today and take part in this. As all of this is going on, Congress is reportedly close to a massive stimulus package to rescue the economy. Let's talk about that quickly with Dr. Parvez Ahmed with UNF's Kagan College of Business. He's on the line. Dr. Ahmed, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Okay, so the stimulus that we're hoping to see out of Washington could be in the neighborhood of $3 trillion. Will it be enough to prevent massive unemployment and a deep recession?
No, it would not, unfortunately. If you look at the forecast at this moment, our economic response or economic performance is actually tied to how well we have been able to contain or flatten the curve on the flu itself, on the COVID-19 itself. And at this moment in time, there is not enough good news on that front, because both the number of cases and the number of deaths are accelerating at this point. So we are still on the ascending side of the curve, which means we have not yet hit the peak. And if we still follow a normal distribution, when we are getting down from the peak, it will take us just as long as it took us to get up to the peak. So if you look at that as a projection, you are looking at several weeks, several months before the curve is sufficiently flattened where we may even contemplate life returning back to normal. And if you look at the economic forecast, at the low end, we have an economic forecast that would reduce GDP by 2% to about $400 billion. And at the high end, it would reduce GDP in 2020 by $1.8 trillion, which is close to 8.5%. So technically a recession is two consecutive quarters of negative growth, so we could be in a recession by the second quarter. That's the most likely scenario. Now, what happens after the second quarter is probably the more compelling question, but that is hard to forecast because we just do not know when the pandemic itself would become much more manageable, or in the best case scenario, when will this pandemic come to an end.
Right.
As long as we don't know the answer, it is hard to create an economic model to forecast the third quarter and the fourth quarter.
The president and White House aides are talking in the last 24 hours about getting the country back to work in a matter of weeks. This is at odds with public health experts who are saying that the virus is going to rage for a period of months. And so I'd like to get your thoughts about how states and the nation should respond to the conflicting information that we're getting.
Well, we are well behind where countries like South Korea and Singapore have been. And if you look at South Korea, for example, South Korea tested one for every 150 people they had. Currently, we are testing at one for every 4,500 people we have. That means South Korea tested 30 times quicker, 30 times faster, more than what we did. And thus, they have started to flatten their curve. But that happened first through testing and then through aggressive lockdown measures. Those two kind of, it's pretty much a consensus. You have to test. Mm-hmm. And then have aggressive lockdown measures for as long as possible so that you can actually begin to flatten the curve. To even contemplate getting back to life as normal before the curve has sufficiently flattened is trying to invite a second peak. And if the first peak looks this scary, one can even wonder like what the second peak would look like. And at that point, we are not talking about a recession. We could be talking about a Great Depression.
Right. And if history is a guide, these viruses do have multiple peaks. Dwayne Belyakov still on the line with us from Bread and Board in Five Points. You're staying open, as you said, for takeout only. Today is the Great American Takeout. Restaurant workers, DoorDash and Uber and Grubhub workers, they are out there working hard getting food to people. How concerned are you, though, about your workers and even yourself being exposed to the virus as you continue working in your establishment every day and sending folks out into the community?
Well, we closed our doors to indoor dining days in advance of the mandates for that very reason. And that really, the letter started with that, our peers in Oregon doing the same thing. We want to operate safely. We want to make sure, I mean, I've got a family at home, everyone, families and friends that we're not wanting to risk exposure to the virus. And so we're doing whatever we can. Our literally every staff member has a timer on their phone. Every 15 minutes it goes off, and that's the sanitizer buzzer. Mm. So we run around the restaurant, and granted the public's not even allowed in the space. So we're doing what we can internally to make sure that everything is packaged safely and that we limit exposure to the public and potentially the virus. We absolutely respect everyone out there doing what they can to feed the community in any capacity that they can. And again, if this worsens, and in all likelihood it will, and restaurants will be further impacted, as the community will, we'll follow every mandate and make sure that we're not complicating the problem or adding to the problem.
All right, let's go to some calls now. Today's the Great American Takeout. Everyone in America is urged to order takeout food to support the struggling restaurant industry in the midst of the coronavirus outbreak. We're talking with Dwayne Belyakov of Bread and Board and Five Points and Parvez Ahmed of UNF about the hit the restaurant industry is taking, but also the economy in general. What are your thoughts, questions? It's 549-2937. Jeff is in Mandarin. Hi, Jeff. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, you'd ask the people in the hospitality industry. I'm kind of one of the fringe people. I do both rentals and Airbnbs. Mm-hmm. My Airbnbs are just vacant right now. But given the governor's order recently to make sure that any visitors from New York or from anywhere else has to self-sequester or self-quarantine for 2 weeks, I've always wondered where he planned on doing that, and Airbnb seemed to be like a reasonable option. I would be happy to partner with things like Shipt and Grubhub or some other mechanism, but I'm not sure that there's a forum for doing that to provide, you know, meals and stuff for people included in the Airbnb.
Yeah.
So just don't know if there's any thoughts on any kind of partnerships between weird providers and hotels and stuff for people having to do self-quarantine.
Yeah.
Or even if you get diagnosed and you want to self-quarantine and you don't want to infect your family.
Sure.
You know, so, or students. I'm just, you know, there's options. I'm just don't know how to do that. But right now, my Airbnbs are dying.
I'm sure they are.
Nobody's traveling.
And I'm sorry to hear that, Jeff. Parvez Ahmed on the line from UNF. People are having to think creatively in these times, and we're going to see more of that. I don't think there's been anything that's come up specifically to what that caller said, but there's been talk of relaxing longstanding HIPAA regulations. All kinds of things are being upended by this crisis, and I think we can't even imagine yet what future changes might bring.
Well, absolutely right. I mean, there are many big questions that will actually come up if and when we end this crisis, from questions like telemedicine. Would telemedicine become more of a norm than it is? And in that case, it could be a good outcome of this or a silver lining to this dark cloud, because telemedicine would help people in rural areas today that do not generally have access to good healthcare. So those kind of things could definitely change, and the supply chains could get reoriented, where supply chains begin to think more domestically and less international. People's recreational patterns could change, particularly companies who spend a lot of money on conferences and travel. They could get more used to using online methods of communicating and holding a conference. Just a couple of days ago, or last week, I was supposed to be at a conference in New Orleans, and that conference was held eventually virtually. And for the most part, I was fine with it. At the end of the process, I felt like, you know, I didn't miss out on anything except that I could not visit New Orleans. Other mm-hmm. than that, I was pretty fine with the content that was produced and how much I kind of was able to absorb the content, even though I essentially stayed in front of my computer pretty much all day.
Mm.
So there could be reorientations of those type, and each one of those reorientations would have an economic impact. It is just hard for us to model at this stage what happens third quarter, fourth quarter, and going forward.
There are so many unknowns here. Here are a few tweets for everyone. Lisa says, the governor can help out restaurants and Meals on Wheels and other food delivery charities by providing a partnership grant. Restaurants and servers who enlist, partner, and are paid to cook and deliver and support Meals on Wheels, and they must be given and wear personal protective equipment. One more tweet for you. I went for a drive yesterday and noticed that Home Depot was busy with customers. Why are people still out shopping? Don't they realize that Florida stores are death zones? What are you doing now to control these situations, Governor? Workers are also not wearing protective gear. And other tweets like that, Duane, people are angry, they're anxious, and they're worried about their financial situation, as you are too. You've asked actually for the state to create a grant program providing emergency funds for businesses with fewer than 150 employees who have seen sales decreases of 25% or more. Rather than a loan, asking if the state could just give grants to struggling businesses. And that is part of your petition at change.org as well, correct?
That's right. And, access to loans is historically very, very difficult for restaurants anyway. That many years of being established is one of the basic criteria before you can approach any major lender for money for regular operations. So what we're hoping is that the proposed SBA loans or relief loans at the bare minimum carry a 0% or very low interest rate and be extended out over a longer period of time, because as we start to rebuild our operations, another payment, another high interest payment or payment or short term loan is just going to add additional burden to the businesses and again hurdle. So grant programs could be key here in terms of access to these funds and letting businesses begin the rebuild process.
Parvez Ahmed, is it realistic that the state will issue grants? I mean, there are millions of businesses in Florida alone that are desperate for either a bridge loan or a grant. How much can the state realistically do?
I think realistically the help has to come from the federal government. And the help from the federal government has to really meet the moment. And meeting the moment is not only helping businesses like the hospitality industry, restaurant industry. Just to give you a comparison with China, when coronavirus hit China, restaurant traffic fell by 90%. Car sales fell by 92% in China. So to intervene at that scale, states have limited capacity to do it, although the states should try harder. But the capacity is limited for a simple reason. States can't print money. The federal government can. And so the help has to come from the federal government. One other thing that I want to mention over here, as we talk about business and a lot of the national conversation is about helping businesses and helping individuals, we also have to help our nonprofit sector. The cultural sector needs to be helped in a massive way.
And we're going to be talking about that on the show today, actually, a little later on. Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, you're right. And let me ask you as well, the idea of universal basic income that former presidential candidate Andrew Yang built his whole campaign around. We now may be seeing at least a short-term version of that with checks going out to every American. Will that make a difference?
Well, it could make a difference if it is sustained over the period of time. If it's a one-time check, the first version of the bill that the GOP was trying to pass yesterday or day before yesterday that I saw was a one-time check of $1,200. That's not UBI. UBI, universal basic income, creates a steady income for all people over a period of time, if not forever. So even if we want to do a version of it, an experimental version of it for the duration of this crisis, then it has to be month to month for every individual. Where it becomes, at least the version that I saw early, where people at the lower end, people who are not paying taxes at the very lower end of the income scale, were getting less money under the GOP bill. And that made no sense to me. The people at the lower end will be hit the hardest. They will be among the first group of people that would be losing jobs, and they would have a harder time covering up for their lost income through unemployment or other methods, because some of them may not be even full-time employees.
Right. Bringing it back to the restaurant business now, here's a comment on our Facebook page from Janora. A special shout out to 1748 Bakehouse in Springfield for their amazing efforts, offering all of the takeout, produce, eggs, and more during these weird and scary times. Their chicken pot pie is amazing. I agree, Janora. I love the 1748 Bakehouse. And I love Bread and Board, too. Dwayne, let's once again mention the two big points you want to make today. Today is the Great American Takeout. People need to order takeout from wherever they happen to be and support the restaurant industry. You can order delivery too, but it's my understanding takeout gives the restaurant a little more cash. So that's important. And then the petition at change.org, it's change.org/FL Main Street Relief Now. Can you tell us how people can support this effort that you've generated around the state?
Well, if they're operators and they're wanting to sign the petition in real time, they can contact us, of course, at info@thebreadandboard.com. We have Nan Kavanaugh, who happens to be Chef Scotty Schwartz's wife, who has been really pivotal in helping us keep organized and get the message out to the media and to the governor himself. She's tracking a Google Doc in real time with all of these signatures as they grow. So operators, feel free to contact us. And, you know, it's never too late to add your name, of course. Change.org, Main Street is too big to fail is how you can search us and join the petition in real time. It's now splintered off in thousands of signatures. And then, of course, you know, today, get out there. I know it's a tough time for everyone. Not just the restaurant industry, and we definitely want to point that out. Our friends in all sorts of retail sectors are feeling the hit of this right now. So we're trying to remain supportive by gift certificates from your favorite retailers across the board, not just the restaurant sector. But today, order from folks who are keeping their doors open and trying to keep the community fed and be safe. You know, we all want to surface from this in a place where we are positioned to rebuild our community and our businesses.
Thank you for that. And final thoughts from you, Dr. Ahmed.
Well, I think if there was more safety equipment, PPE equipment, protective equipment for workers, some sectors like the takeout industry where people would need food to be delivered for a vast variety of the population, we would need some level of delivery of groceries, food, and other kinds of supplies at their homes. That could be done much more safer if there was enough PPE available across the country. And not only are this is affecting the frontline healthcare workers, it is also affecting restaurant workers and people like grocery store clerks or even Home Depot clerks who have to interact with the public at some point. And that's making the impact of the pandemic that much worse. It still boggles my mind why the president has not invoked and fully implemented the Defense Production Act and directed companies to produce equipment that would actually protect frontline workers, healthcare workers, help with patients who would be invariably needing many more ventilators and other equipment down the road.
Right. He has not done that as of yet. We'll continue to follow that along with all of these other threads to the story. Thank you so much, Dwayne Beliakoff of Bread and Board in Five Points. They are open for takeout. Lots of restaurants are. Take part today in the Great American Takeout. And Dr. Parvez Ahmed of UNF's Kagan College of Business. Thanks to you both.
Thank you. And stay safe, everybody.
All right. Up next, how one local business is doing its part to protect people during this outbreak. They're turning alcohol into sanitizer. We'll explain. Don't go away.
First Coast Home Pros guarantees excellence in each of their professional home cleaning services, including carpet cleaning, grout cleaning, and more. More at FirstCoastHomePros.com. Our goal is to be the best service company you've ever invited to your home.
Baptist MD Anderson Cancer Center is the southeastern partner of MD Anderson, the nation's leading cancer hospital. Baptist MD Anderson patients receive personalized, compassionate care from a team of cancer experts. For information, 844-MDA-BAPTIST.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm. Terrell Hogan's consumer law practice provides representation for personal financial injuries caused by unfair and deceptive business dealings. More at waynehogan.law.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. The St. Augustine Distillery is doing its part to help people during the coronavirus outbreak. Since hand sanitizer is very short in supply right now, they're using alcohol to create and distribute their very own hand sanitizer. Mike Diaz is with the distillery, and he's on the line from St. Augustine. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great, and it's so good to talk to you. Oh, this is such a great idea. How did you guys hit upon this?
Well, candidly, a lot of distilleries kind of got the idea at the same time. Most of the alcohol in hand sanitizers, and certainly what comes out of us, our stills are ethanol. Hand sanitizers use a denatured alcohol, but all the national craft distillers and everybody realized that as we're having a closed tasting rooms and as demand on the on-premise consumption, the bars and restaurants were dropping. We wanted to keep people busy, and it looked like something that we could do that would help offset some of the shortages and kind of honor our commitment to be good stewards of our community. So
sure.
It's worked out very well.
And how? What's the mix? How are you creating the product?
So we use the World Health Organization has published a recipe, and the FDA, just over the past couple of days, the FDA approved everything. Everybody was making it following the World Health Organization recipe, which basically includes 96% ethanol, which is just alcohol, mm-hmm. A hydrogen peroxide, a 3% hydrogen peroxide solution, and some glycerol, so something that for just a little slipperiness to help keep the solution on your hands while you spread it around. And so the FDA rushed through approval of all craft distilleries making this, following the World Health Organization recipe, and the TTB, which is Tax and Tariff Bureau, our other regulatory agency that regulates the production of alcohol, they also approved craft distilleries to be able to do this. So it's been really kind of nice to see these governmental agencies react extremely quickly to break down some of the regulatory barriers that would otherwise keep us months of approval.
Yeah,
so it's
sure.
Been nice. It's been really good.
And how can people get the distillery How can people get the sanitizer from your distillery?
Well, right now the two batches we made have been distributed. We distributed to first responders and to community people that came by and visited the distillery. We're in the process now of getting more. The believe it or not, the isopropyl alcohol and the hydrogen peroxide have been the hard thing, as well as the bottles. So we anticipate having more product by the end of the week, beginning of the week at the latest, depending on when we get all the bottles in. And we have a bunch of people that have called and signed up, various first responder agencies and all that. But we will most likely have some at the distillery for people coming by. But I would say our limited staff doesn't have the ability to respond to individual requests. So we would ask people to kind of keep an eye on our social media, on the Facebook and the Instagram, and we'll be publishing availability as soon as we know more. It's such a supply chain challenge between all the products, both the chemicals and the bottling, that we just don't know enough to give hard dates right now.
Yeah. Now, this hand sanitizer you're producing at the St. Augustine Distillery, you're calling it Heads Up, right? It's got a
right.
name. I like that. And that's great.
Yeah. We produce alcohol in a pot still, and in a pot still, as opposed to a big column still, more information than most people ever want to know. But in a pot still, the first portion of alcohol that comes off of a distillation run is a very high alcohol, very similar to a rubbing alcohol type, and that's called the heads. And we take those cuts off and utilize those for cleaning supplies typically. And we use that for the first batch of the hand sanitizer. Now, this next batch, we're just using straight 190 proof ethanol because we're following a different recipe, the WHO recipe. And so, we're excited to produce it and excited to do something that's going to help everybody through this.
And we're speaking with Mike Diaz of the St. Augustine Distillery. Full disclosure, they are an underwriter on WJCT. They are creating and distributing hand sanitizer. A distillery is the perfect place to do this because they produce alcohol, and that's mainly what sanitizer is. Now, Mike, you've suspended tours at the distillery because of the coronavirus threat, but the public can still support you. You're still have a gift shop and alcohol production operating. Tell me
that
about your business.
Yeah, so our business, we're still, we have our production team is still producing, and so we're making alcohol and bottling and shipping to our distributors, because believe it or not, this week has been one of the largest weeks ever for every liquor retailer. Well, it's a bad week for the bars and restaurants. It's a very good week for the liquor retailers. And so our production staff continues to be open. We're not doing the tours, and we do have our gift shop that's still open 10 to 5, and we're monitoring very carefully the amount of people that come in. It's been, as you can imagine, not real busy, but we're just trying to keep everything open while we can.
And what about
being safe and smart at the same time?
Sure, while you can. And let's talk about your sister distillery, Citygate, which you opened recently in St. Augustine as well, right?
Right. So Citygate is right on St. George Street, and as you can imagine, that is more of a, it is 100% retail only, so tasting and tours, and we have closed that to the public, and we are just having our kind of a skeleton production crew continuing to work there because, we're not, it's very difficult to keep the amount of crowds down, and honestly, I think St. George Street, today it's tumbleweeds there, so rightfully so, people are isolating and staying in, so that's going to be a little bit before we see tourism come back to the St. George Street area in the numbers that make sense.
And what are your thoughts about how the state is responding, since we are a tourism-driven state, heavily dependent on the service economy? As a business leader down there in St. Augustine, what are other business owners saying to you about this? And what are your thoughts about pleas to the governor for rent relief, small business loans, or even grants to get folks through this?
Yeah, they have responded with some emergency small business bridge loans, and so those applications are out there. I think it's floridadisaster.org. I have to double-check that. But there are the state immediately came through with applications folks can file online for disaster relief. I believe they're, bridge loans up to $50,000. They have been publicizing the alternative employment available. So a lot of the retailers are looking for help. So whether they're the grocery stores, liquor stores, a lot of retailers that are still busy are looking for help. But I think the state has done a pretty decent job. You know, this has happened very, very fast.
Yeah.
And so, when we look, I was looking at my calendar, and I realized it's only been a couple of days, really. And, in the scheme of things, it's pretty quick. But I think, nobody's seen a shutdown of this magnitude. And I do think the state's doing a pretty decent job. It's just that there's no replacement for wide open commerce.
Of course. And we've all been hit in the face with that simple fact in the last week. Now, you have built this amazing business in St. Augustine. And it's really kudos to you and Philip McDaniel down there for rising to meet this challenge by helping with the hand sanitizer product. If you're just tuning in, the St. Augustine Distillery is creating and distributing hand sanitizer with the alcohol that they have on site. It's called Heads Up. It's a blend of ethanol, distilled water, aloe gel, oil, and this is a way for them to pay it forward into the community because, of course, everybody needs a bottle of it right now, and it's hard to get a hold of. You mentioned that first responders are getting your first batches, but you just to reiterate, you hope to have more available to the public by Friday, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so we're working hard to do that. Dependent on the supply chain, but working hard to get there. So, again, I'd say watch our social media pages. We will alert everybody the second we know with more detail. But this has been it's like driving in a heavy rain. You know, you can see a couple feet ahead of the hood, but you can't see very far ahead.
Yeah,
because we're still waiting to see what products are available. Make sure that we can get adequate bottles, make sure we can get adequate cleansing chemicals and all those other things. So we continue to produce the alcohol, and then, as soon as we get everything else, we'll make it available as quick and as broadly as we can. And the other good news is our partners in the industry, the big guys like the Bacardis and the Pernod Ricards and everything, are stepping up as well. And so we believe we're going to see a very large response from the entire distillation community that's going to help fill this void as well.
So, well, Mike Diaz of the St. Augustine Distillery, we've got a break. Again, follow the St. Augustine Distillery on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and in a few days they will have more hand sanitizer to distribute to the public. Thank you so much, Mike, for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa. All right. Have a great day.
And up next, how you can support the arts, even from the comfort of your couch. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross addresses issues important to our Northeast Florida communities. Our firm is pleased to support WJCT's First Coast Connect.
Learn more at waynehogan.law.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
If first-time unemployment filings are as high as they are expected to be this week in the multiple millions, What does that tell us about how Americans are feeling?
Well, I mean, this tells us that there are a lot of very desperate people out there right now, and they aren't optimistic that they're going to be able to find jobs.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. What to expect when we get the next slice of unemployment numbers next time on Marketplace.
Today at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, Michael Pollan, who's written best-selling books about the origins of the food we eat and how psychedelics are helping scientists understand consciousness and the brain. He has a new audiobook about caffeine, its effect on the mind and body. As usual, he immersed himself in his research, quitting coffee cold turkey. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
First responders help keep us safe, but coronavirus has created a new class of hero, grocery store workers.
Don't worry about stocking up your pantries. There will be plenty of food for everyone.
I'm Todd Zwillick. How is the food supply keeping up with demand? Plus, your latest acts of kindness from around the country. That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, another segment of the economy that's been hit hard by this crisis are artists and cultural institutions. But you can continue to support the arts while practicing social distancing and staying home. Yeah. Joy Young is CEO of the Cultural Council of Greater Jacks, and she's on the line. Hi, Joy. Are you with us?
Oh. I am with you. Hi, how are you?
I'm great. It sounds like somebody's trying to beep in on you. That's what that sound is. Okay, so how can we support artists and arts organizations right now?
Well, you know, Melissa, these are tough times. Artists and arts organizations, you know, they educate our youth. They question the status quo through thought-provoking programming. They entertain well over 1 million audience members. And, you know, even in hard times, they're working.
Get rid of that other call if you can, Joy. Just like on your cell phone, just, you know, end it if you could. That would be helpful.
Let me see.
Okay, I guess I'm being told it's on our end. But go ahead, Joy.
Okay, so, you know, the public certainly needed to continue to help. Make sure our arts
actually,
and cultural...
Joy, we're going to call you back because the sound is so distracting. I'm so sorry, and I appreciate your patience. We're going to call you right back.
No,
just go ahead and hang up. We'll try again. Okay, so as Joy was just mentioning, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville has created a public group, Art Connects Jacks. It's on Facebook, and it's to support new work and encourage and educate and entertain and bring hope and healing at a time when we need it most. If you go to this Facebook group, you can find easy ways to support all kinds of arts and culture organizations all over town. The Florida Theater, the Jacksonville Historical Society, the Ritz Chamber Players, Mocha Jacksonville, the Cummer Museum, the Beaches Museum, and many more. Okay, Joy, I think we have you back now. Are you there?
I am back. Yes.
Okay, so go ahead.
So I was saying that, you know, in our best times, we're adding over $85 million to our economy, employing more than 2,000 people, you know, really adding vibrancy to our lives here in Jacksonville. But because our doors are closed and because we are practicing social distancing, we are lacking in ticket revenue, we're lacking in concession sales, we're lacking in tuition, we're lacking in so many areas, and we need our public to stay involved and stay engaged. Right now, the Cultural Council has offered to artists a webpage called hashtag Arts Connects Jacks. And this is a Facebook book that is going to be a support network to encourage, educate, and entertain, and bring hope and healing at a time when we need it most. This is a place where artists can begin to show their work, lead people to their own websites for sales. We are also having a resource page, and you began to mention some of those activities that are happening. So we see the Art Center Cooperative is going to showcase online their members, and this is a visual arts organization. This showcase will be on their website and their Facebook page, and this can be found at the Arts Center Cooperative or tacjacksonville.org.
Okay, let me quickly mention too, as a compliment to what the Cultural Council is doing, WJCT has a Facebook group. If you go to facebook.com/groups/JaxArts or wjct.org/JaxArts, it's just a virtual gathering place for the arts and cultural community of Northeast Florida. We'll be trying to share content like videos and photos and other art posts from everyone who's participating, all the leading arts groups in town. And to be clear, Joy, your effort has a much broader mission, including conversations and dialogue about how to deal with coronavirus as well. Yeah,
that is correct. So we are serving as a hub of resources and information for our not-for-profit artists, organizations, arts organizations for artists, just so we have that information coalesce in one area. Our website is culturalcouncil.org, where people can learn about how we're promoting arts and culture during this pandemic and economic crisis, but also resources around funding, for example. As you know, the federal government and our local governments have been working hard to secure access to funding for the nonprofit organizations and small businesses. The Community Foundation has grants, and we anticipate some relief funds through the National Endowment for the Arts. So we feel confident. We do feel confident that those funds will happen and come through for us. Our national advocacy group called American City Arts is asking for everyone to reach out to their federal elected officials to advocate for relief funding specifically for arts and culture so that we have access to the same kinds of resources that we know are going to be available for corporations.
All right. Well, Joy Young, the CEO of the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, it's good to hear your voice, and I hope to see you in person soon when we're able to support the Cultural Council and the arts. And Joy, thank you for being with us.
And we'd ask for all to just go to our Cultural Council website, take a look at our current
webpage. And we're out of time. That's culturalcouncil.org. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for being with us. Keep calm and flatten the curve, everybody, as we get through this together. Back tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.